Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Tim Clinton, Executive Director at the Dobson Family Institute, wanting to remind you that our ministry is listener-supported. Your contributions allow us to continue the fight for families everywhere. You can partner with us by going to drjamesdobson.org. That's drjamesdobson.org. Or call us toll-free at 877-732-6825. That number again, 877-732-6825. This world, you know this, needs a serious transformation of the heart. Your gift can help make a difference. I hope you'll stand with us, and thank you for being a friend of the family.
Today on Family Talk.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Family Talk, which is a broadcast division of the James Dobson Family Institute. I'm your host, Dr. James Dobson. Christians have forever wrestled with the concept of God allowing bad things to happen to good people. In fact, I wrote a book about this some years ago called When God Doesn't Make Sense. And we're going to talk about that topic from another perspective today. It is not easy to keep our eyes on God following the death of a loved one or the loss of a job or any other unexpected adversity. Now, today, we're going to deal with that subject through an interview with my colleague, Dr. Tim Clinton, conducted with Dr. Tony Evans, another good friend. You may know that last year the Evans family experienced a tragic loss in the sudden death of Dr. Evans' niece, Winter Pitts. I had interviewed her and her husband, Jonathan, a few years before that, and I was shocked to hear of her passing. It was unexpected, and it came as a horrible blow to the whole family and a lot of us. In a moment, Dr. Evans is going to share how his family overcame this incredibly dark time. He explains the hope that we have for heaven and how we can celebrate God's goodness in the midst of indescribable loss. Before we hear that conversation, let me tell you a little bit more about our guest. Dr. Tony Evans is the founder and senior pastor of the Oak Cliff Bible Fellowship in Dallas, Texas. He also founded a ministry many years ago called the Urban Alternative and has authored over 100 books. You can hear his voice around the country on his daily radio program, which is now called The Alternative with Dr. Tony Evans. Here now is Dr. Tim Clinton and Dr. Tony Evans on this edition of Family Talk.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors, sitting behind the microphone today for Dr. Dobson here on Family Talk. It's a ministry produced by the James Dobson Family Institute. We're actually here in Dallas, Texas, at the American Association of Christian Counselors Mega National Conference, and I'm honored to be here in studio with the real champion of the faith, pastor, radio host, and just a dynamic, prolific leader of our day, Dr. Tony Evans. Tony, welcome back to Family Talk.
Always good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
As we get started, Tony, the current condition of the nation, the church, I know it's something you think about, pray about, and you speak a lot about, but can you share some thoughts about where you think we're at, what's happening, where you see us going?
Well, I really take my cue from 2 Chronicles 15, verses 3 to 6. It says, in those days there was no true God, no teaching priest, and no law. It says, there was no peace to him who came in or him who went out. It says, city rose up against city, and nation rose up against nation. And then it says, for God troubled them with every kind of distress. So if God is your problem, that means only God is your solution. What we're experiencing in America is the passive wrath of God. The active wrath of God is when he does things directly, like in the Old Testament. But the passive wrath of God, explained in Romans 1, is when he releases you to experience life without him. It says he turned them over, he turned them over, he turned them over. He let them have life without him. So the further God is excluded, the more chaos enters into that vacuum. The more the true God is included, the more order enters into that vacuum. What's interesting is the cause. It says, didn't say there was no religion. It says there was no true God. And it didn't say there were no preachers. It says there were no teaching priests. So the point is, the failure or success of the church influences the well-being of the culture or lack thereof. God's not going to skip the church house to fix the White House. So God's people have set it up for the culture to be in the chaos it is in. So until God gets our attention, I don't care who you vote for. It won't solve the problem because God created the distress. So that brings me to verse 4 of that chapter, which says this. In their distress, they called on the true God and he let them find him. So God allows distress to get our undivided attention so that when he gets our undivided attention, he feels at home again to land the plane of his glory in the midst of our culture.
Tony, so many people for years were challenged to call Washington, you know, step up to the plate, if you will, and make a difference. What do you see among the people, and how do or what can we do to respond? Because our hearts cry out for righteousness, you know that, and we want to see that in our country. We want to see it around the globe.
Well, a number of things. First of all, God will not manifest his presence in the midst of an illegitimately divided church. So we have been frayed so much, even within the evangelical community, along political lines, along racial lines, along gender lines, along class lines. And this division, because God is a unified being in his nature, when his people are illegitimate, disunified, then he's not comfortable being in their midst or letting his glory be manifested in their midst. That's why John 17 makes it clear that God's glory shows up when we are one, which is oneness of purpose, not sameness of persons. So first of all, there needs to be a unity around a standard. Secondly of all, we must develop not a church orientation, but a kingdom orientation. The kingdom is the rule of God. It's his righteous standards reflected in every area of life. What Christians have done is we've picked certain areas we want to be righteous in and other areas we want to be cultural in. And so we become conflicted saints. And God is not going to accept being parceled out. So we have to have a kingdom comprehensive view of God and a kingdom comprehensive rule of our role in the world. And our role in the world is not to mimic the culture. Our role in the world is to bring God's worldview into the culture in every area of life.
God help us. You are so beloved because of your preaching and teaching style. What I love is you talk about real life, real issues.
I try.
Raw. Yeah, you bring it right to us. Dr. Evans, you, your family have gone through some pretty troubled, difficult seas. You've experienced, I think, the loss of your brother, a niece, along the way, and you've talked openly about it. And I thought it might be really good for us to go in that direction. Can you share a little bit about the journey you've all been on as a family?
Well, it's been a series of things. First of all, it was my mother, and then it was my brother a few months ago. He told me, you know, he was dying of myeloma, cancer of the blood. And so we had to walk with him through that. He was a professor at Atlantic University in Boca Raton, Florida. And then suddenly our executive director at our national ministry, the Urban Alternative, was Jonathan Pitts. And he was also married to my niece, Winter Pitts. And he had just taken a new assignment as an executive pastor in a large city church in Nashville, Tennessee. And they just purchased a house and just sold their house here in Dallas. But they were still in Dallas getting their kids ready for a camp that all of our family attends. Our family is very close, and we're together all the time, and the nieces and nephews are always over each other's house. And so they were all getting all the kids ready for this camp that we go to in the Dallas area. She's 38 years old. She was packing her kids' clothes for camp. And she just wasn't feeling well. So she went and laid down. Her husband was there and just went kind of to comfort her. And then he noticed that she was losing the ability to breathe. And he began to give her a resuscitation and called 911. And unfortunately and surprisingly, she passed away at 38 years old with four daughters. And of course, the whole family, as we are always together, rushed to the hospital. And I basically had to say goodbye to her. She had had a little problem with her heart, but it wasn't viewed as serious, but evidently it was more serious than we knew. So she went home. What was awesome in the midst of this tragedy was Jonathan, while we were at the hospital, gathered his girls together to tell them the bad news about the departing of their mother and her homegoing. And then they just began singing praise songs, he and the girls, while crying and us with them, celebrating the goodness of God in the pain of life. And that said volumes to me about the reality of Christ when life hurts the worst. And it doesn't get any worse than that, 38-year-old mother and wife. So we have gone through that as well, and it has actually brought our family even closer together.
They say that during times of loss, those who love much grieve much, that those are hard buckets to carry.
Yes.
And those dark moments, well, a lot of questions come up.
Sure.
Why us? Why now? Mm-hmm. I mean, it happens to other people. It shouldn't happen here.
Sure.
And the grieving process brings seasons of mm-hmm. emotion and questions. Tony, you and your wife, Lois, helped them journey together, kind of, I guess, maybe in a countercultural way.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain the grace or the messaging that allows you? Because I think a lot of people listening, when they hear stories like that, and some of them probably going through it right now, you swallow and you say, I want to sing. I want to hold on. But it's like, it's not the way it's supposed to be.
Right. Well, we have to accept a key premise of the Christian faith. It's hard to accept, but once you accept it, you're then able to function a lot freer. And that is simply that this world is not our home. Once you buy that, I mean, really just get in there and accept that, then every day becomes a bonus in this world because you have not made this world the only world. And so our future must be made as real or even more real than our present. Now, our present is in the physical. So we live with the five senses and that's what we are used to. But when we learn to look at the life to come and it becomes as real or more real than the life that is, then when the life that is in trouble, we do not sorrow as those, 1 Thessalonians 4, who have no hope, because our hope was not planted and our flag was not dug in here. You know, when I go to a hotel, I live out of my suitcase. I never unpack my suitcase and use the drawers that are in the vanity in the hotel. I don't do that. I only work out of my suitcase because I know I'm not staying here. I'm just here for a minute and I don't make myself at home. Mm-hmm. Now, I take advantage of the room and of whatever the facilities has to offer, but I don't get too comfortable because I know I'm going to leave here after a day or two. Too many Christians have unpacked their suitcases here. Mm-hmm. And as a result of unpacking your suitcase, when that gets disrupted, you're out of sorts because you made a place that was never meant to be home, home. And so if we can kind of adjust that mentality so that we are here to serve the purposes of God's kingdom and we maximize that service while waiting for our true home, then you're able better. We still sorrow, but you're able better to handle the sorrow because now you're actually going home.
It's almost like you have an ability to experience simultaneously two opposing emotions, sorrow and joy.
Yeah.
You're right.
Paul said, In Philippians, he says, I'm betwixt and between. He says, I don't know whether it's better to stay here with y'all or to go home to be with the Lord. You know you have reached the sweet spot when you have to fight between the two. When you have to fight between staying here and going home, you're in the sweet spot then because you're in the place where you have not allowed earth to cover up heaven, to cover up the life that is to come. And we want to grow into, because it's a growth process, we want to grow into it. In fact, in the life of a believer, when we are ready to transition, that's why God will let things get so bad that we want to transition. we're willing to let go to the life that is to come. And that's the real hope, the eternal hope of the Christian faith.
I remember when my dad called me, Tony, and he was dying. I said, "Hi, Dad." He said, "Tim, I love you, son. I wanted to call you and tell you that I'm going to the kingdom of our God."
Wow.
And I didn't want to hear that.
Right.
He said, "Tim, I'm going to the kingdom of our God." I said, "Dad, you've taught us about it since I was a kid." And he said, "Son, I really love you." And I remember just a prior conversation, he looked at me and said, "Tim, it's because of him, I want you to hear me, that I'll see you again. You serve the Lord faithful. Be there." And those are hard, hard words to swallow. I said, "Dad, everything will be okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to come see you." I'm jumping on the first plane. I was in Atlanta. I said, I'm coming home. I'll be on the plane at 2 o'clock. I'll see you." He said, "I'll be waiting for you." I remember going and walk into the room. My dad was still there, and he had some coherence to him still. I said, "Dad, you doing okay?" And he said, "Oh, I'm just seeing little helicopters flying around, Tim. You know, just about to have fun." And but I grabbed his hand, and he held on tight. And, man, I hated to see him go. You know, they say old sailors can smell land before they see it. Uh-huh. You know that? Mm-hmm. He knew. Tony, it's hard to release. It's hard to let go, because in this world we see dimly.
Right.
You know that?
Yes.
It's hard to believe. It's like Thomas saying, "Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief."
Absolutely.
You know
Absolutely.
That? And Tony, how do you, for all these years of pastoring and on the personal journey and just speaking into those moments, and I hear you. I mean, I hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Just keep reminding us that, Tim, this is not the end.
You know, to the degree that we can help ourselves and help people to develop what I call this eternal perspective. It's a way of looking at life and a way of living life. The book of, one of the books I've been going through recently is the book of Ecclesiastes. I'm working on a study Bible
book
and a Bible commentary. Mm-hmm. And in working through that, I've gone through the book of Ecclesiastes. The theme of the book of Ecclesiastes is one phrase: under the sun. He says that all through the book, under the sun, under the sun, under the sun. And under the sun means on earth. And so he talks about the ups and downs of life on earth. And he says in verse 10 and 11 of chapter 3, a very profound phrase. He says, "God has set eternity in our hearts that we might fear him." In other words, God has placed within us a dissatisfaction under the sun. So he spends time talking about there's a time for this, time for that. Polar opposites, laugh, cry, happy, sad, glad, mad. I mean, he's got all these polar opposites, and he says, and there's no way out of it. You are trapped in a closed universe, and you're not going to be able to break out of it. He says, and it's on purpose. Why is it on purpose? He says, because God has set eternity. He gives you enough dissatisfaction in this life so that this life is never allowed to become all of life. And when you understand that the downside of this life, because we all like the good side, but when the downside of this life happens and you understand that's on purpose, it changes even how you look at the downside. You take Job. Job has lost everything. He's lost everything, you know, his health, his finances, his business, his children have died. I mean, it's a mess. But he comes to chapter 42, and he makes this profound statement. He says, "I have heard about you with the hearing of the ear."
Yes.
Now, I've been to Bible school, I've been to Sunday school class, and I've been to church. I've heard it all. But now, on the downside of life, I have seen you with my own eyes. So what I say to people is this: when life is not in your favor, it's not going your way, whether it's physical, relational, health, whatever it is, that is a prime opportunity to look for a new vision and view of God. Look for God in the pain, because he allows the pain to connect you more with eternity than in the absence of it.
The old Puritans called it the Valley of Vision.
Valley of Vision.
The Valley of Vision. You see differently.
Yes.
It changes you. As we press forward, and we reach for help and hope, sometimes it's just about holding on.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes it's just about holding on, hang on. You're going to get there.
Yeah.
You may not feel like it's coming, but he's got a hold of you. It's that footprints in the sand piece. When you're feeling all alone and like there's no help and no, there's no Calvary coming.
Mm-hmm.
Remind us, Tony, again.
Well, you know, hopelessness is a deep thing, because hopelessness means that you do not see a tomorrow. That's the essence of hopelessness. When people are suicidal, that means they don't see anything out there that could ever make this better. And of course, in what you do and what Dr. Dobson does and what the ministries that we serve do, is to try to give hope. And hope is simply seeing beyond where you are. And if you can give people what I call a windshield and take them away from living in their rearview mirror of their reality, and they see things differently, what you call the valley of vision, you are then able to help them to walk through the now, because they're seeing beyond the now. Unfortunately, many, certainly in the secular world, but even in some parts of the Christian world, we're merely trying to help people to survive the now. And people do need to survive the now. But the best way to survive the now is to learn to live beyond the now. Because if I have hope, even if nothing has changed in my momentary light affliction, Paul calls it, even if my circumstances haven't changed, if I'm seeing something different, anticipating something different, acknowledging something different, it changes how I can cope with now until and if now ever changes. So changing the sight line is the greatest coping mechanism that you can give yourself or give somebody else.
Elohim is our refuge and our strength. He's a present help during times of trouble. Therefore, we won't fear, though the earth be removed and the mountains be cast into the depths of the sea. He's in the midst of it. Be still.
You know, we've had, over the past few years, a set of circumstances. We had the soccer team that was trapped in the cavern.
In that mine, yes.
And then the miners that were capped in Chile, and they were trapped. Any direction they looked in, there was no way out. And all they could anticipate was death. No, limited food, limited water, and unknown time span. What they kept trying to give the kids or the miners, they kept trying to give them hope. Now, they're living in darkness. But they tried to get communications. They sent notes. They sent, look, don't give up, because we're trying to get to you. And the mere knowledge that somebody out there who they did not see was trying to get to them in the darkness of where they were helped them to cope in a situation in which they were trapped. We live in a world of trap. Whether it's my personal trap that I'm trapping myself, maybe my sin has trapped me, or a trap that other people, you know, the Bible has the good, bad, and ugly. The good is what you do that's beneficial. The bad is the sins that you have. The ugly are the sins of others that have messed you up, like Joseph, okay? Joseph finds himself trapped, okay? But if you allow at least for God to give you a beam of light, it may not be the sun, but you don't need the sun to cope. You need a beam to cope, because that means somebody is trying to get to you. If we can get that through to ourselves and people, then we can give hope, and hope allows you to survive trapped.
Tony, where I grew up, they said, that's a word. Tony's giving us a word today. Dr. Evans, thank you for stopping by Family Talk.
Thank you.
Dr. Dobson's love for you. And this is a great message. You know, because sometimes God doesn't make sense.
Absolutely.
But he's in the midst of it. And his heart is toward us.
Well, I'm very grateful for you, and I'm certainly grateful for Dr. Dobson, because he was the key person who launched our ministry when other people didn't give it an opportunity. He did, and for that, I will forever be grateful.
We celebrate that great work in and through you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm Roger Marsh, and you've been listening to Family Talk and Dr. Tim Clinton's interview with Dr. Tony Evans. What an encouraging message of hope we have in Jesus, especially during our toughest struggles. If you're walking through a dark time in your life right now, please give us a call at 877-732-6825. We deeply care about what you're facing right now, and when you call, someone on our team will be happy to take the time to pray with you. That number again is 877-732-6825. Visit our broadcast page to learn more about Dr. Tony Evans and the various ministries that he is affiliated with. Go to drjamesdobson.org and then click onto the broadcast page. Thanks so much for listening today. Be sure to join us again tomorrow to hear an exciting presentation from the late Zig Ziglar. He'll be explaining the deep joy and delight that we have in the good news of Jesus Christ. Don't miss what he has to say tomorrow on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.